Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to get in trouble today, and I might as well tell you that right at the beginning of this program. Because we're going to be talking about something that I don't think you'll hear talked about virtually anywhere else. And that is the way some people dress in weddings. Modesty in weddings is going to be the topic today, because we're going to be talking about the whole idea of what a wedding is and what a wedding is to represent among Christians. And there is now a raging conversation that is beginning about the immodest dress that some persons, and it's not the guys, it's some of the ladies and girls are wearing, that is really causing a controversy in a good many churches. You have churches that are beginning to establish very firm policies on these things, and I'm going to suggest a few guidelines and one very clear structural suggestion that I think will help local churches to deal with this. But right now, I know there are all kinds of weddings being planned. There are all kinds of dresses and other things being ordered and bought. And while we're thinking about this, let's just go ahead and deal with the issue. Where do we honor modesty even in a wedding? Because all of a sudden we have this situation in which people are dressing for weddings in a way they wouldn't dress for any other event. And we're wondering about what that says. And we'll get to that in just a moment. First, a review of some issues in the news. What about custom pornography for a consumerist age? That's what USA Today is reporting. And there is an underlying dimension to this story that ought to have our attention. Right now, Hollywood is trying to figure out how to handle the digital revolution. And by the way, did you know that Hollywood makes more money off of DVD sales than off of tickets sold in theaters? You know, that's a complete economic reversal of the model. When you talk about these box office sales, yes, they are important. They're not irrelevant. But the average studio is making more money off of the post-theater sales of DVDs than selling tickets for people to actually see the movie. And I guess that really makes sense. But you know who's watching this. Well, you have Hollywood trying to figure out, how can we now do something like a movie version of iTunes? Why can't we come up with some way that we can sell movies over the internet, such that someone can then download them and burn them onto a DVD and then put the DVD in their player and watch it in their living room? Why can't we do that? Hollywood is trying to figure out how to do it, and all the major studios are working with various technologies and trying to figure this out. But someone has figured it out, and USA Today is out today saying that it's the porn industry. Now, think about that for just a moment. The pornography industry is now ready. As a matter of fact, Vivid Entertainment, how do you like that for the name of a business? Vivid Entertainment. It says it will sell starting Monday its adult films through an online movie service known as Cinema Now, which will allow buyers to burn DVDs they can play on any screen, not just on their computer. This is another first for the adult film industry. And as USA Today is very clear, it was the porn industry that pioneered the home video market and that got on the internet before the mainstream Hollywood entertainment industry was there. Michael Greeson, founder of the Diffusion Group, a consumer electronics think tank in Plano, Texas, said, quote, "Leave it to the porn industry once again to take the lead on this stuff. The rest of Hollywood stands back and watches and lets the pornography industry work out all the bugs." Now, I found that really interesting. So here you have the pornography industry that is right out there leading the development of these technologies because they have such a profit interest. They expect to just reap all kinds of profits, windfalls, from any new technology that makes porn more accessible to people. And just think about the opportunity here. Now, a person who wanted to buy a pornographic film doesn't have to go into some kind of seedy neighborhood and to go into some kind of seedy store in order to buy it. Now, this person can simply download it with the anonymity and privacy of his own home. He can burn it onto a DVD. And here, porn, like an octopus, just sends its tentacles deeper and deeper into the society, into homes, and into families. Meanwhile, they're also developing the technological platform for the rest of Hollywood. Now, it ought to tell us something. When the entertainment industry, in terms of its delivery systems, is being led by pornography, it ought to tell us something that USA Today recognizes that it's the porn industry that is developing, pioneering these new technologies because they're going to be out there first in terms of the sale of this material. The very fact that the pornography industry drives so much of the economy and so much of the technological innovation in this country ought to tell us something. Some estimate that the pornography industry makes up the seventh largest economic component of the U.S. economy. That ought to tell you something as well. Well, folks, when we're looking around the country and thinking about the things that are most important for us to talk about, somehow entertainment tends to come right up to the top of that with regularity. It is because Hollywood, television, the cable systems, DVDs, music, all of this as the stuff of popular culture has a tremendous impact on the way Americans live and the way Americans think. And that ought to make us think. In my commentary that was published earlier this week, I deal with truth, fiction, or something in between, the meaning of television, and it's still up at albertmohler.com. That's MOHLER.com. I start out by quoting Neil Gabler. You may see him on Fox News from time to time, a media critic. And very interestingly, he suggests that what is happening is that television is becoming so powerful a force that what it presents as real, this is his word, metastasizes into the popular culture. And then Lee Siegel is out this week in the New Republic with a fascinating article on the HBO series Big Love. You remember that? It's the series that is promoting pornography as a form of entertainment. You have a man with three wives and multiple children. And what makes this HBO series so interesting, Lee Siegel argues, is that now television takes this from the margins of society, this lifestyle, this household, if you want to call it that, of polygamy, and makes it the stuff of entertainment. And then normal begins to look abnormal, and the abnormal begins to look normal. He says this is fueling, and this is his word for it, an antinomianism in the culture. Now, that certainly catches my attention as a theologian, because antinomianism is a technical word for the breakdown of all law and moral authority. Now, if someone writing for the New Republic, a secular magazine, basically of the left, is seeing this as a concern, well, we as Christians must seriously see this as a pressing concern. It's not just that we're opposed to polygamy, and it's not just that we're offended by what HBO routinely puts on as its programming. It's that we have to be concerned that our neighbors are now beginning to see these alternative lifestyles, if you want to call it that, these sinful ways of life, and whether it's polygamy or same-sex marriage or whatever, they're being presented as normal. And Neil Gabler is right. This does metastasize into the culture. And so to some extent, movies and television are becoming the stuff of everyday life. If you want to see our future, just look at television. Now, Gabler makes another very interesting point, and that is that years ago, the formula for television was that you had the normal set as the main theme of the show, and then the eccentric was brought in kind of as spice. Just as an example, you had the Andy Griffith Show, very traditional community structure, traditional family structure with a widower who was raising his little boy with a live-in aunt, and then you had married people and all the rest. It all made sense in a universe that people could understand. And then if anyone walked into that from a different worldview or from a different way of life, it would have been very apparent. When the people come in from Hollywood in order to think about filming there in Mayberry, when odd things happen, they're seen as odd. But now the formula is reversed. And both Neil Gabler and Lee Siegel are onto something, I think, when they say, look, now what happens is that television focuses on the marginal, on the abnormal, and then it's the normal that looks strange. We should not be then surprised that our own children and our own neighbors are very confused about all of this. Just what is normal? Now, when you start looking at all of this from a Christian perspective, we are reminded of the fact that we are living with people who are deeply embedded in culture. And that's because we ourselves are deeply embedded in the culture. And if we are not thinking actively as Christians about what this culture is doing to us in terms of shaping our worldview and our ways of thinking, then we will find ourselves merely accommodating to the larger cultural picture. In other words, we are swimming in a great ocean of cultural environment. We are shaped by the kind of messages that we receive from advertising. We're shaped by the kind of products that we buy in the store. We're shaped by the kind of aspirations that we see presented to us in this culture. We're also shaped by the vision of what is normal. And that is one of the big issues that ought to have our attention as Christians, because when you talk about something like the legalization of same-sex marriage, it's not just about, as if you could say, just about transforming the institution of marriage. It's about completely resetting the notion of normal. And the same thing's true with Big Love and polygamy, or any number of other issues that we could find celebrated in the larger culture, and especially in entertainment. What Hollywood and television thinks we find interesting or will find interesting, compelling, and dramatic tells us a lot about ourselves. It's not the programs that fail. It's not the movies that flop that should have our attention. It's the ones that succeed. Because there is an audience. That tells us by their very success that there is an audience for this. And what we are watching is the metastasizing of the abnormal as the normal in the larger society. We are, as Neil Gabler says, beginning to live our lives as if it's our own private movie, straight out of Hollywood. We'll be back to talk about modesty in weddings. This is the Albert Miller Program. Well, like I said, we're going to be in some controversial waters here, but I want to tell you why. I've had several people write to me and say, you know, I am just concerned about what is going on at weddings, the weddings of Christians. So we're not here talking about secular weddings. We're not talking about what takes place between a couple and the justice of the peace. We're not talking about the wedding of non-Christians. We're talking here about Christians getting married in church. And this is a pressing issue. Some of my favorite people have been talking about this over at Girl Talk. That's Carolyn Mahaney and her daughters that have an incredible blog there. You can find it at going to girltalk.blogs.com. And her husband, of course, is my good friend C.J. Mahaney. She writes on April the 19th, an entry on their website, says that this has become an issue. And she goes back to the Bible Church of Little Rock, where C.J. and Carolyn had been speaking. And she cites Todd Murray, who is the worship pastor there at the church, and his closing exhortations on the issue of modesty and weddings. And I just want you to hear these words, because I think this will get right to the heart of the issue. This is Todd Murray speaking there at the Bible Church of Little Rock. He said this, "Ladies, please don't forget to apply these principles of modesty to formal events and weddings. In recent years, I've become increasingly grieved by the immodest dresses of both brides and bridesmaids at the weddings that I officiate. I have observed a number of young ladies in our fellowship who have dressed modestly all their lives, appearing on their wedding day in extremely provocative dresses, exposing more of themselves than on any other day of their lives. I assume the best about what's going on in the hearts of these young women. I don't think that they went to the wedding dress shop determined to be provocative. No doubt they just wanted a dress that would be elegant on this day that they have dreamed of all their lives. When a bride and mother set out on their expedition to find a wedding dress, they are, quite naturally, thinking like women. Unfortunately, there is no one in the shop who is thinking like a man. I'd like to make a radical proposal, girls. Why not take your father with you to the wedding boutique? If that thought is just too much for you or for your dad, at least consider taking the dress out on approval and allowing your dad to see it before you make your final purchase. Here are a couple of questions to ask yourself when shopping for a wedding or a bridesmaid's dress. Does this dress reflect the fact that a wedding ceremony is a holy service of worship and not a fashion show? And can I picture myself standing in this dress for an extended period of time, just a few feet from my pastor as he opens the Word of God and leads me in my solemn vows?" And that's the end of the section there from Todd Murray of the Bible Church of Little Rock. But I think this is a pressing issue. And I'll tell you, my own personal experience has been that I have been shocked at many weddings. I have been shocked at the revealing dress that many of the women are wearing, in particular in the wedding party, the bride and the bridesmaids. And I agree with Todd Murray entirely, not only in his broader concern, but in his personal principles laid out here. But I have to wonder, why are there people who would be modest every other day of their lives and on this day would operate by different rules? Why on this day would they wear the most revealing clothing they may ever have worn in their lives? Now, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to hear from you. I want to hear, perhaps some of you are struggling with this issue right now. Perhaps you're in churches that have been dealing with this issue and you have some concrete proposals to make. But I also want you to know that I have my own favorite expert on this matter here with me in the studio. I am very glad to welcome Mary Moeller, my wife, who is an expert on modesty. As a matter of fact, she speaks in churches all over America on this issue. And I really want to know what she thinks about this, because I have to tell you, I think that the expert on this probably needs to speak with a female voice. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's really exciting to have you here, because I don't know of anyone who's given more attention to the urgent need for women to recover modesty. Can you tell me why is it that that this is such a foreign idea to so many young women today?
Well, you know, honey, we're still seeing it across the board with people, whether it be street clothes, church clothes, whatever it is. But it is true that we're seeing a lot of it in weddings where people who normally would dress in a way that is modest in every biblical sense of the word suddenly just throw all the rules away when it's wedding day. And that day of all days, when hopefully that bride has been preserving herself, that this is the day that she goes and is presented to her groom of all days with all eyes on her, you would think that would be the day when modesty would be, you know, at the top of the list. But we're just seeing so many strapless dresses. We're seeing bridesmaids' dresses that she has selected that do not flatter her bridesmaids, her friends. And so it's really an enigma.
Now, some people are going to come right back and say, this is just legalism, it's just judgmentalism, and furthermore, it's just subjective. Modesty is not an objective reality, it's merely subjective. You've done a good job of refuting that in your writings. By the way, Mary is the author of Modeling Modesty, a very, very influential little booklet on the issue of modesty that we will link to on the website tonight. But Mary, it is not just a subjective issue, right?
No, it isn't. And they will also throw out the option or the argument to you that there's just no other options out there, that if you're going to get married in 2006, that you've got X number of choices to make. And so here are the dresses and you just go with what's there. And so they use that mentality to really just give into the culture. And we know that there are options. You may have to look a little bit harder, but they're out there.
You know, you also, in talking about something like this, need some specific guidelines. And you know, I appreciate the guidelines that C.J. Mahaney gave to his daughters. And let me just share what those are. Four principles he set down. Number one, find a wedding dress with a neckline that completely conceals any cleavage. Two, avoid dresses without sufficient covering in the back. Three, strapless gowns or dresses with only spaghetti straps are revealing and thus do not serve the men in attendance at your wedding. And four, a modest gown should not be excessively tight and draw unnecessary attention to your figure. Mary, do those guidelines make sense to you?
That sounds reasonable, and that sounds like, you know, it's certainly something that you could fulfill through even without going to these online sources, that there are reasonable places where you can shop for wedding attire for you and for your party that, you know, would simply fulfill what's on that list. I think it's a great list.
Well, I want to honor my friend CJ for having the intentionality to frame this for his daughters because, you know, I was just preaching for CJ in his church, and you have these beautiful wedding pictures there on the wall, and it just helps me to know this was CJ helping to minister to the men in his congregation by speaking to the women, in particular his daughters who are getting married. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is an issue that is really raging in some congregations. I was just in conversation today with folks in different churches who are trying to come up with certain policies. You know, how can we put together a set of policies? I want to make a concrete suggestion here. CJ's suggestion to his daughters, these four principles, I think that's a great way to speak to young women and to advise them about how they can serve the cause of Christ and serve the men in the congregation by being modest on their wedding day. But there's a structural proposal that I want to suggest, too. I think that churches need to spend a lot more attention and give a lot more attention to how to think of weddings as the appropriate way to celebrate the coming together of a man and a woman within the congregation for a marriage and to celebrate the wedding as a service of worship, not merely as some kind of social event or legal technicality, but a service of worship. And to that end, I would just really commend that churches put together some kind of committee of senior, mature, spiritually minded Christian women, in particular women, who could help to frame the kind of policies that would be in place. And I'm going to go a step further. I would suggest that in my church that there needs to be a formal screening process even for the dresses. You may think, well, that's just incredibly legalistic. Let me tell you, if you don't have some mechanism, then all the wrong things are going to happen. If you just leave it to individual subjectivity, then yes, you're going to end up with things in the sanctuary of your church, for weddings in your church, that you're going to believe are inappropriate. And I think the time has come when we're looking at this, at the falling away and diminishing of modesty as a concern in the popular culture. Recovering in the church isn't going to be easy. And I think we need some senior, seriously, spiritually minded people to really start to give this some attention. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mohler Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
As expected, the callers are lining up. You've got something to say about this. And we're going to go first to Becky, calling from Asheville, North Carolina, listening on WFGW. Go ahead, Becky.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I listen to your show every day on the way home from work. I just believe you're being a bit too legalistic. And it's hard for me to hear a man tell a woman what to wear, if I can be so bold.
Oh, I want you to be bold. I appreciate you calling. Let me just say that, first of all, I think the reason you may need to hear a man on this is because it's the men who are most likely to sin based upon how a woman is dressed. And so I would say I'm not offended by your call, Becky. I appreciate the fact that you did call, and thanks for listening. But I think what a woman often can't know, and I think that was C.J. Mahaney's point to his daughters here, what a woman often can't know is what kind of effect a dress or a certain style is going to have on men. And I'll just tell you that there are women I greatly respect and love who have shocked me by the way they've dressed, because, you know, I've just had in front of me, in my visual screen, something that I wish I weren't seeing, because it doesn't, I'm not her husband, and it doesn't bring out the holiness in me. It is a cause of stumbling. Even if it's not a cause of sin, it can be a real distraction. Does that make any sense, Becky?
Yes, it does. And I love your program. I listen every day, and I know what you're saying, but it's just difficult for a lot of people to, you know,
yeah,
to understand.
Well, and I agree. And that's, by the way, in my proposal, Becky, I'm not really suggesting that you put men primarily on this committee. I think if I were right now advising a local church, and there are two I've talked to in recent days, I would say put together, let's do this the Titus II way. Let's put together a group of senior women who can help advise the younger women in the congregation. Because, first of all, you don't want my advice on fashions. And, Becky, your instincts on that are exactly right. But I think you probably do want a mature Christian man's response to how a man is likely, or a teenage boy, for that matter, is likely to respond to seeing this dress or this woman in this dress. Thanks so much for your call, Becky. Mary, you know, when you look at this, do men and women look at this differently?
I think they do, and I think there are some women who just suffer under the illusion that they don't want to be told by a man anything, particularly about dress. I mean, what do you know about dress, and what do you know about how suggestive this is? And they just miss the whole chapter on how men are visually stimulated. Somehow that just doesn't occur to them in the dressing room or when they're heading out. And for someone like Becky, I just have to say, from my perspective, it's hard when we're seeking to be godly, holy women. If we're trying to be holy on the inside, but on the outside we're dressing like everyone else and saying, well, that really doesn't matter, then that's not adding up. And I think that's something we need to take very seriously.
Yes, and I appreciate the call, because I think the very fact that Becky spoke as kindly as she did, I think there are just a lot of people out there who haven't really thought through this or are trying to think about how to think through it. And I think in a lot of congregations, some people are shocked that this would all of a sudden become an issue. But it is becoming an issue, and sometimes in one congregation more than another. And it's usually because something happens. You know, without a policy, all of a sudden something happens in the midst of a wedding, how someone's dressed, or even what someone says, you know, or does. And all of a sudden the church goes, you know, we better think about putting some policies together. And I think that's an important part, too. Let's go to Allison, listening on WTVN, calling from Holiday, Florida. Go ahead, Allison.
Hi, I just want to say thank you for taking my call. I got married over 2 years ago. And when I got the perfect dress, and there was one thing wrong with it. It wasn't modest in the front. It was a little too low cut. And you can take your dress, your dream dress, to a seamstress, and you can get it altered to make it modest. It was still tasteful. It was wonderful. My bridesmaid dresses, I didn't find anything in any boutique that I liked that I thought was modest. So I went through patterns, and it actually turned out cheaper for my bridesmaids to have their dresses handmade for the wedding than it did for them to buy these expensive dresses that were immodest. And I think the bottom line, what it comes down to, is there should be across the board, this is a line of modesty, and it doesn't matter if you're getting married or each day. And the women who have a problem with a man telling me, oh, you shouldn't dress like this. It's society that says, oh, you need to come to this point and be like this. And I think that's where women actually need to welcome their brother's advice and say, you know what, I'm going to stand up and say, I'm not going to be what society says I should look like.
Well said, Allison. I appreciate the spirit and the content of your call. I have to tell you that one of the things that concerns me is where this society is going. I was just in a bookstore last night, just walking past the magazine racks, and you see the fashion magazines, and I just had the thought, I can't imagine my wife or my daughter, two beautiful, beautiful women, dressed in any of this stuff. It's just impossible for me to imagine. Is this where society is going? The phone number, 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back. This is the wedding season. Churches are booked. The invitations have been sent. Started a few weeks ago. About half of all weddings that take place in America take place between April and June. There they are. And the other half are spread throughout the rest of the year. And, you know, it is a beautiful picture. And what we are aiming for in the worship service of a wedding is to demonstrate the glory of God in the coming together of a man and a woman in purity, in monogamy, and in faithfulness before Him, to be obedient to His commands, and to receive all the goods and the gifts that are involved in the covenant of marriage. There's a holiness that's involved here. Celebration? Yes, of course. Family time? Yes, of course. Historical marker in young people's lives? Yes, of course. But it's also a reminder by the very fact that it's in church being officiated by a minister is a responsible reminder to us that this is not about us. It's about the body of Christ. And it's about the Creator who gave us this gift of marriage. We're talking about modesty in weddings. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Barbara's been waiting patiently on the line in Jonesville, Virginia, listening on WHCB. Your turn, Barbara.
Yes, I feel like brides do that because they want attention. It's their day, and it's their chance to look like the front of Bride magazine or Barbie doll, what they've been waiting for. And they know everyone's looking at them. They don't realize that it's not the dress, and it's about marriage. It's more about themselves, and they're on display. So the day is more about them, and they know that they can get the attention.
And so you're saying, Barbara, then that they risk the immodesty because it would increase the interest?
Yes.
All right. Very clear argument there. Mary, my guest today, of course, is Mary Moeller, my wife and resident expert on matters of modesty, the author of the booklet Modeling Modesty. What do you think, Mary?
I think Barbara raises a good point that takes us back to a bigger issue of modesty that we see with prom dresses and everything else, where you've got very little parental intervention. And a lot of these young brides are just given total free rein, and the mothers particularly do not want to rock the boat. They've got a pretty good relationship with this daughter. It's her big day. She's been a good girl and all of that nonsense. And so if she finds a dream dress and it's completely inappropriate, well, we don't, you know, that mom doesn't want to show up on that girl's blog someday as being one of those moms that's just too, you know, straight-laced. So the mothers buckle and give in for the sake of it being the big day, and the result is very immodest dressing.
Like I said, she's my resident expert on this issue. And, you know, I appreciate the way you actually get to the heart of the matter, Mary, in talking about the fact that this is a matter of responsibility. It's not just a matter of preference, and it's not just a matter of giving someone what she wants. It's a matter also recognizing, and you know, we've talked about this quite a bit lately, just in our own home, looking at you know, the kind of things we've experienced, the weddings we've attended and places we've been. There are people who are close to us, you know, the good friends that shock us by what they allow their daughters to wear. What are they not seeing?
Well, it's the same argument. It's just everybody else is doing it. And we see this also with the bridesmaids, and this creates a hugely awkward situation when you're someone's best friend, you want to be in her wedding, and she chooses the dress, and you go to try it on, and you feel half naked in it. And if you make a scene about it, or you tell her, I can't wear this dress, I can't be in your wedding, it's going to create a huge firestorm. But, you know, what choice do you have if you're going to live by certain standards, and you're not going to compromise those standards?
Well, and what are you going to do with the reality that many of the men who are there and young men are going to be stumbling, sinning? I mean, I've been in situations where I've had a hard time looking at someone just to speak and say hello to her because of the way she's dressed. And I know that's not what she premeditated. I don't believe that. But nonetheless, she's just not taking responsibility for how she's dressed. Let's go to Ray, calling from Los Angeles, California, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Ray.
Mr. Mahler, our small group has discussed the modesty issue at length, and frequently Christian liberty comes up, and the people who are opposed to the idea of modesty say that it falls under their Christian liberty. But we try to remind them that once you reach the point where you're causing somebody else to sin or you're making it difficult for them to pursue a life of holiness, that's where you have to lay down your own personal preference and keep other people's faults, if you will, in mind.
Well, absolutely, Ray. We need to take your point with deep seriousness. We must have our concern for the weaker brother. For that matter, for all brothers who in matters like this are weak. Let me just say that right up front. There's no Christian man who's alive. If he's still breathing, he's still struggling, okay? Hear me say that, ladies. If it's a male and he's still breathing, he's going to be struggling with visual stimulation that will lead him to sin. And you need to care for your brothers to serve them by not allowing that to happen. Let's go to Natasha calling, she's from Central City, Nebraska, calling a KMMJ. Go ahead, Natasha.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I agree with what you just last said to that guy. If any guy is still breathing, he's struggling. And that's something that my husband struggled with before we got married just a little over 2 years ago. And when I was choosing my dress, I tried to find something that was modest but yet flattering. And I heard you say earlier that spaghetti straps and strapless shouldn't be worn. And I had a strapless dress that was very modest. It showed absolutely no cleavage. And just to make sure, I had pulled out my wedding pictures just to see it. And there's no cleavage showing, and it showed hardly any back. So to put those stipulations on it, I think, is a little harsh. I think you just need to let them know what's too much.
Okay. Well, Natasha, I really appreciate your call. I appreciate your concern for your husband, and I appreciate your concern for him before he was your husband. And we don't want to fall into legalism here. But I'm no expert on fashion either, so let me defer to Mary here. What do you think?
Well, you know, this is something we hate to point out somewhat with a family show here, but the fact is that a strapless dress, no matter how high that strapless dress, gives the illusion that one pull and that dress can be off. Now, if there are straps and there are anchors on the shoulder, that illusion is not there. So that's the reasoning behind it. It's not meant to be legalistic. You know, we can talk a whole lot about the back and everything else, but the fact that there is nothing anchoring on the shoulders, that is what the illusion is.
Well, and, I think a part of this also is the fact that I wouldn't have thought of that, honestly. What you just said, I know that you've been working with this for so long, you would know that. I think that it's just great that Christians would talk about this. I think this conversation today is the down payment on a longer conversation that Christians need to have, and not just on this program, but in the local church. That's what's most important. In the local church, there needs to be the taking up of responsibility to protect the modesty of the congregation. And that's why I come back again to say, I think you don't need just parents involved in this, although parents are the front line to be responsible here. Dads and moms, you've got to stand up and do what you know is right. But there's also the responsibility of the church to say, look, this just isn't about the two people getting married. It's not just about the wedding party. If it's a true church wedding, it's about the church. Where's the church saying, look, here's where we're going to try humbly and kindly to be discerning together? We'll be right back with some final thoughts, coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program. All right, with time running out, we're going to go to Margaret, listening on XM 170 in Dallas, Texas. Go ahead, Margaret.
Hi, I just wanted to make the comment that I think that you guys sound very legalistic and moralistic, and I think that a wedding is about celebrating beauty and celebrating women, and I don't think because she has on a strapless dress and shows a shoulder or cleavage, I think is definitely over the line. But I just think that, you know, Jesus talked to the woman at the well, and everyone was horrified that he would stand speaking to such a woman. And I think that brides are at all different stages of their sanctification, and I just think to impose these legalistic rules upon them is, you know, maybe you need to look at the splinter in your own eye. And,
well, Margaret, hold on just a minute. You're going off topic here, but what rules would you then put into place?
I would say that no cleavage, you know, and I don't think there's anything wrong with a shoulder or a back or, you know.
And you're not concerned if...
I was fashion for...
You're not concerned if that would lead the men in the congregation to sin?
A shoulder?
Well, or a back or whatever. I think the point here is that, I'll just tell you the truth, Margaret, I think you're woefully underplaying the Christian responsibility in the wedding. And I think the other thing you said, when the wedding's about the woman and the woman's beauty, I think that is just fundamentally the way the world thinks, and that's okay for the world. But I don't think that is a Christian understanding of the wedding as a worship service at all. And I guess that's one of the big issues I have, is that people want to come to church to get married, and they want to have a secular wedding inside the church. And, I mean, let me put it this way. If it's a worship service as it's supposed to be, why would a woman wear anything to the wedding, either as a participant or as the bride or as a guest, that she wouldn't wear on Sunday morning in worship? Where do the rules get changed there? Let's go very quickly to Blake calling from Corydon, Indiana. Go ahead, Blake.
Yes. I have three daughters, 5, 3, and 1, and I don't know if you've ever tried to shop for, shall we say, Sunday clothes for girls that age, but it's really hard. You end up buying things that are a size bigger than what they actually are so that they'll go down below the knee, and most of the tops want to show belly buttons, and these girls don't even know the difference between boys and girls yet.
Well, God bless you for knowing the difference, Blake. That's why God put you there as dad, and God bless you for being that dad. Mary, you know, just as time is running out here, you know, why should we be concerned about this? I mean, are we making a mountain out of a molehill?
No, we're not. We're not at all. And just as we said earlier, just like we have specific directives in Scripture for women for dress that are timeless, and those don't fall off on the wedding day. And so we need to be heartened by the fact that there's others out there like us that are looking for these options, that they're out there. You may have to look a little bit harder, but they're out there.
And let me just suggest you go to the weblog tonight at albertmuller.com. Overnight, I'll be putting up an article on this. I'll link to Mary's booklet, Modeling Modesty, to the Girl Talk blog with Carolyn Mahaney and her girls. This is a good conversation to start, and it is by no means finished. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.